Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars to West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. More at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. This week we're talking about the challenges in getting low-income West Virginians ready for work with a man who's been on the front lines of that fight for 20 years. Pastor Matthew J. Watts leads the Grace Bible Church in Charleston. He's the founder of Hope Community Development Corporation. Pastor Watts, thanks for coming on The Front Porch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're here as always with Rick Wilson, hillbilly philosopher.
Hey, Scott. Good to be here.
And also Lori Landon, lawyer and conservative columnist who tweets at WV Pundit. Hey, Lori.
Hi, guys.
To what extent, Pastor Watts, do you think that the fact that African Americans are overrepresented in our prison system, to what extent is that because of a higher rate of wrongdoing among African Americans or a higher rate of police presence and prosecutions, an unfair amount maybe against African American communities versus white communities?
I think it's almost 100% the bias against black people in West Virginia as to why they're overrepresented. And I'll tell you why. I'll just go through the whole system and tell you why. It's because blacks are treated differently in school. There's just a study by University of Pennsylvania, right? The blacks in West Virginia are expelled, suspended from school at much higher rates. And if you look at the data closely, they're often expelled for things that other students don't get expelled for. Let's come to the juvenile justice system. There is a plethora of research there. Dr. Stephen Hoff put together a 200-page report. He says when you take in consideration past criminal history and you take in consideration the charge, blacks are still treated differently by the system itself when they appear in the court system. And then the other report that Haas kind of was a part of, and that was the police stops, right, where there were these 301,000-plus police stops on the highways, and it came back that blacks were stopped, ticketed, and searched at a much higher rate than Caucasians. But when stopped, ticketed, and searched, they were found to have drugs and contraband at a much lower rate. But the police say we don't racial profile. My argument to that was that had you stopped them and searched them and they had drugs or contraband at a higher rate, I would have said excellent police work. Some kind of way you figured out who to stop and who had the drug. But it wasn't the case. You stopped them at a higher rate, searched them at a higher rate, they had drugs and contraband at a lower rate. So why would you stop them at a higher rate if it wasn't racial profiling? Mm-hmm. So in West Virginia and around the country, there's a lot of bias. Even when, if you look at the drug things, all the research by the Justice Department and independent groups is that the people groups in this country, they possess, they distribute, and they use drugs at about their representation in the society. So blacks, about 13% nationally, possess, use, and distribute about 13% of the drugs. Caucasian, high 70s, et cetera. But when you look at who gets arrested, who gets prosecuted, and who goes to prison, blacks at a much higher rate. Why? Because the war on drugs initially focused its target in black communities. The west side of Charleston, the perfect example. The type of police presence by the Charleston Police Department, the Kanawha County Sheriff's Department, and the U.S. Marshals, right? So if you put that much police presence in that neighborhood, then that's who you're going to stop, and then you're going to arrest. I talked to prosecutors. I said, what do you do? They said, well, you know, we got to spend a lot more money if we investigate a case in South Hills because we got to get a stronger case. But we can take the same amount of money, and we can arrest a lot more people and get a lot more convictions.
What about the argument? This has been played out a little bit in the Democratic presidential primary. I think Bill Clinton's record on crime has come up as an issue for now his wife. And he, I think the other day, last week, was pushing back on this and saying, you know, you're complaining now about the high incarceration rate in the African American community as a result of, you know, different things that we did in the 90s. But you asked for this. You begged. You said, drugs are a scourge in our community. We need tougher enforcement. We need you to come in and get these gangs and these drug dealers out of our communities. And now your kids are complaining that your community has been unfairly targeted. So, you know, do you think there's any truth to that?
The truth is in the middle. The truth is in the middle because in the mid-80s is when the crack cocaine hit the west side of Charleston. I watched that Holocaust, and we're still living with the consequences of it now, right, of what happened in the late 80s, early 90s with crack cocaine. Well, the president has been somewhat defensive, and it's understandable. And yes, people were concerned about the violence. They were concerned about the gangs gaining control of the drug traffic, and they knew that there was a law enforcement component. But people were also talking about we got to improve education and job training and economic development. But what Clinton them chose to do is they chose to put their investment in the war on drugs, in the 94 crime bill, which had a $30 billion price tag, right? But the fact that the three strikes, you're out, the fact that the lifetime ban from getting food stamped you to felony conviction for drugs, lifetime ban from public housing, lifetime ban from a Pell Grant, lifetime ban from workforce development job training program. I mean, that's a part of the Clinton's crime, and that's his legacy. Now, if the Black Lives Matter movement were articulating the right argument, and if Clinton was articulating the right response, their argument should be to Clinton's wife, if they're going to tag her with what he did, how are you going to fix it, right? And the way to fix it is a pathway to full citizenship restoration for those nonviolent people. 45 years of the war on drugs has created millions of convicted felons. Many of them were nonviolent, and many of them are no harm to society, and they've been out of prison for years and have not committed another crime. Why can't they have a pathway to full citizenship restoration? We need the whole society to understand that we can't keep growing the felony population in our country and have two countries, one with full citizenship, one with partial citizenship. This is the argument.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, more with Pastor Matthew Watts on getting education and employment for our youth. But first, you're listening to The Front Porch right now because more than 10,000 people are proud members of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. What's a member? It's anyone who's made a donation to West Virginia Public Broadcasting in the last 12 months. Are you a member yet? If not, it's easy to join. Just go to wvpublic.org and click the red donate button. We're speaking with Pastor Matthew Watts of Grace Bible Church and the Hope Community Development Corporation. Pastor Watts, you've spoken out a couple times in the media, I think pretty bravely, about how these issues have affected your own family and your own life. Your son was convicted and received probation for low-level heroin dealing and has some substance abuse issues.
I think my work probably prepared me for that. I witnessed the anguish on the faces of mothers and fathers over the years and saw how gut-wrenching and how painful it was for them to go through that. For me personally, it was harder for my family, really, because my wife is arguably the greatest mother. I mean, what my wife did for our five children, basically, and how she nurtured them and took care of them, and basically, I mean, it was kind of incredible. And to see the hurt in my wife's eyes, to see the hurt in the eyes of my four daughters, that was the hardest thing for me. Because my son, you know, was their hero. I mean, he's the only boy of five children, beloved by his nieces and nephews, and a good guy.
And now out working for the Hope Development Corporation.
Absolutely. And so the thing here is that you make missteps. What my son did, you know, it's inexplainable, but not unforgivable, right? And that I do not believe that my son should have been in the federal system. I believe he was there because of who I am. I believe a first-time drug dealer with no prior criminal history that has worked, is taking care of his children, that the only thing on his record, as articulated by the federal judge when he went before him the first time, said all you have is a seatbelt violation where you paid a $25 fine. But for him to be brought into the federal system, I believe, was kind of an overdoing, but that's the power of the United States government.
Online, there, I'm sure you're aware, maybe you are shielded from it, I hope so, of some of the nastiness.
No, I wasn't. The only time I ever read the stuff that's online. I never read what's online, but I read that.
And people saying, making the worst judgments about you, about your wife.
Sure.
And your pastor, I mean, what is it about the human desire to judge that comes out in times like this?
Here's what I've found in 35 years of trying to do this type of work. Is that people want heroes. They want role models. They want people they look up to. They just don't want them next door. They just don't want them to live in close proximity to them, right? And so they admire people from a distance that they don't even know. And then there are just other enemies. It's the enemies of what I represent, you know. And that's what the criticism on the line, it's about what I represent. It's what I believe in, what is the core of my being as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and my unwillingness to compromise on that is what brings out a lot of vitriol from a lot of people.
Speaking of Jesus, you probably saw this one coming from a long way off. A prophet is not without honor except among his own people in his own country.
And the only reason I wanted to bring this up is because I think it's a good example of the struggles that young people face.
Sure.
But also what young people can finally find, hopefully, through the struggle. My understanding from what our conversations is that your son has a degree in a field he's having trouble finding work in, but instead he's trained himself to be useful in a dozen different ways. It's almost going back to Mount Hope.
Exactly.
We had a point in time when you might be able to get a job at a Union Carbide have it for your entire life, but our children aren't going to have that life, and they're going to have to adjust to a new sort of reality.
Scott, you're exactly right. A lot of people don't realize that my son turned down a job early to help me because he saw me struggling, right, just to try to do this work that we're trying to do. And I don't think he had any intentions of staying around for 10 years, basically, making a very low wage, right? But he has, and he's become indispensable, right, because of his skill set in building construction and maintenance and that type of thing. And I'm just very, very proud of him. I'm very proud of how he has responded to this. He never went and hid. He never tried to excuse what he did. He took total and full responsibility for it. He would not try to help them catch other people. He said, what I've done, I'm responsible for it. I'm not law enforcement. I'm not going to put my father and my mother and my children in jeopardy to be retaliated against. So whatever my consequence is the consequence I'm prepared to accept. You can't ask any more than that. There are so many young men and a growing number of young women that have gotten caught up in the criminal justice system that have learned their lesson and that really want to be a responsible citizen. And they just get kicked in the face. And they're told that you no longer are of real value to the society and to us. We're casting away gifted people that we really need.
Well, so what's our quote for today, Rick?
Wait, you're going to let Rick do the quote? We have a pastor here.
No, I'll throw mine out here and you throw yours.
I can't touch Rick. Just got to read too many books.
You trade them off.
Ping pong sometimes at meetings. But going back to the workforce thing, the harvest is heavy, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore to the Lord of the harvest to send forth laborers.
Our workforce has been depleted. It's really been depleted, and I believe that our workforce, the depletion of our workforce in the state of West Virginia, I believe that it is the single most daunting challenge that the state of West Virginia faces to really grow and expand the economy and to maintain what we have.
You feel like this should be the center of the debate for governor and what's going on at the legislature, these questions of why people can't get back to work, not something that happens kind of on the side.
Yeah, really. If I have a minute, I'll tell you why, right? And my quote for the day is from Charles F. Kettering, right? Brilliant engineer with the General Electric Corporation. And my favorite quote from Kettering was that a problem well-defined is a problem half solved. And I've used that in my career as an engineer. I use it today as a community development, as a pastor. If I can define the problem accurately, I think I'm halfway to the solution.
Okay, so define the problem of our extremely low workforce rate in West Virginia.
We've had the lowest labor force participation rate in 1976. We spent billions of dollars, and it hadn't gotten better. Because I believe that the problem is not well defined, and we keep articulating a problem that is not the problem. There are a few things you got to talk about. One is the low education levels of young people coming out of high school, not prepared for work, not prepared to do college level work. The second one is the poor health of our people due to obesity, due to substance abuse, and due to the age, the poor health. And if I had to take one more, it is the impact of the juvenile justice in the adult criminal justice system. And that's the one that people don't really understand that impact. When you have 150,000 felons in this state, and that they are marginalized from the work. So we are artificially depleting the size of the workforce by the number of people that have felony charges, and then it's further depleted by the people that's sick and are using substances and that can't work. And then the depletion has also been compounded by the fact that we're not producing people with the skill levels to enter employment or to enter into community technical colleges to gain the skill levels. And that's why I believe it's the number one pressing economic issue that has been ignored by the executive and legislative branch of government in the state.
Pastor Matthew Watts leads the Grace Bible Baptist Church in Charleston, founder of the Hope Community Development Corporation. Pastor Watts, thanks for coming on the Front
Thanks
Porch.
Thanks for having me.
And that's the Front Porch for this week. As always, you've been joined by Rick Wilson, the American Friends Service Committee, and Lori Lynn, a conservative columnist and lawyer. Thanks for listening. Hey, one more thing. Did you know you can listen to all your favorite West Virginia Public Broadcasting shows on demand? More and more people are discovering the podcast for Mountain Stage, Inside Appalachia, and even The Front Porch. Download our podcast on your smartphone on our new West Virginia Public Broadcasting app, and you can listen on your own time. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening.